Can everybody hear me in the back? Okay.
We got quiet.
It doesn't matter. It's all I can do anyway. Okay, how would you like to have a mediocre lesson? Mediocre. Do you know what the word mediocre means? It comes from a combination of two old words that means the middle of a rugged mountain. It means you're only halfway up the mountain. It means you've started, but you haven't got there yet. So something mediocre means it's just kind of good enough to get by. It's a start. So let's see if we can progress here. A mediocre lesson will make us feel pleasant. A good lesson will make us think. A great lesson will inspire us to respond. And I hope that's what all of our speakers strive to present. It's not just mediocre, not just to fill up so many minutes. Andy said, ask Andy how many minutes I had. I had 45 minutes. So I'm thinking, I got to fill up 45 minutes. That's a mediocre approach. A good lesson, I'd want to make you think about the subject. But a great lesson would make you want to respond. Not necessarily if you walk up and down the aisle, but if you respond in your life, if there's a change based on the scriptures. So our lesson is trust. Now I'll ask you three questions, and we'll try to talk about them at the end of the lesson. The first one is, do you trust me? Now, not just necessarily me, but do you trust any speaker? Anyone that stands in front of you and talks, do you trust them? And how can you tell whether you trust them or not? And finally, getting on the spiritual realm, can we prove our trust in God? So let's first ask ourselves a few questions. What is trust? According to the Webb definition, and there's many, it is a firm belief in the reliability, the truth, the ability, or strength of someone or something. We all understand that. Now let's go see what Strong says about it. And actually, according to Strong, there are five different Greek words that are translated trust. And this is a combination of definitions, and you kind of get the idea. It's to expect or confide, to hope for, to wait for salvation with joy and full confidence, to have confidence, to rely, to entrust one's spiritual well-being, to have confidence, reliance, something put down alongside, a deposit, a thing committed, correct knowledge and pure doctrine of the gospel, to be held firmly and faithfully, and to be conscientiously delivered unto others. That's a combination of all the definitions Strong puts to all those five different words is translated trust. Now, according to you, what do you say trust is? Do you think, I'm going to make it easy, I'm going to ask you questions. Do you think trust is instantaneous? Either you trust somebody or you don't. Is it miraculous when we obeyed the gospel? Was one of the things God gave us miraculous trust in Him? Is it a growth process? Is there any evidence of that? And I got two last points to ponder before we get on over into Gideon. And this is a true false for you to answer now, and you might see them again at the end of the lesson. First one is trust, belief, and love. Three things God cannot give us, we must decide to develop and grow them ourselves. You believe in it for you. Is that true or is that false? What do you think? What are you working toward? Second statement is, trust is earned, trust is learned. True or false to you? What would you say? I would have answered these perhaps differently until I studied on this lesson, because something came up in this lesson on Gideon. Now, Gideon is the guy, we jump to the end, spoiler alert, Gideon is the guy that took 300 men and through his work, the Midianites were conquered. And that's what we think about, is when he's standing there with these 300 men. But there is a lot of stuff, and perhaps the most important stuff to us is what happened until he got to that point. So let's look at Gideon, and we're going to pretty much read through the chapters and make hopefully some good points. This is in the 6th and 7th chapter of Judges. In the 5th chapter, right at the end, is it the story of Jael driving a nail through Sisera's head and killing him, and the land had rest 40 years. But then the children of Israel messed up. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian. Notice the Lord did it for 7 years. 7 years. Now, I don't know if there's anything magic about 7 years. You remember Joseph in Egypt. There was 7 years of good harvest and then 7 years of bad harvest. So I don't know if there's anything magic about the 7 years, but it's long enough that the people were tired of being oppressed for 7 years, but it was short enough that they remembered what it was like to not be oppressed. So 7 years is just about enough time to get them real aggravated and wanting a change. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And it was so when Israel had sown that the three groups of people, the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites, and the children of the east, even they came up against them. But they didn't kill them. They didn't want them dead. They wanted them around to grow food so that they could come and get the food. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till you come unto Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, they came as grasshoppers for multitude. For both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it, but not kill the people. They wanted to destroy the land. Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. After 7 years, they'd had enough. And it came to pass, when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel, which said unto them, Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, drove them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. But you have not obeyed my voice. Now, there's a little bit of trust involved there. This is just a little ripple here on what we're fixing to get into. He told them to not fear the gods of these other people. But they didn't listen to God. At that point, they weren't ready to trust Him. And there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. Why did he hide it? Because the Midianites stole their food. And so he, after 7 years, he figured out, if we're going to have anything, I got to thresh it or it'll waste in the field. I got to hide it to keep the Midianites from taking it. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Okay, if you see the bottom of the screen, I propose to you that this was the first test or proof or lesson of trust to Gideon. Now we're not looking, this is the same Gideon that's going to stand with the 300 against the Midianites. But at the very beginning, Gideon has some questions with trust. And this is the first one. This is the beginning. The angel said, The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us. Question of doubt. A statement of doubt. If the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all these miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? See, they remembered that. But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And the Lord looked upon him and said, Go in this your might, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent you? That's God's statement reassuring him. You're the one that's going to do it, Gideon. It's by your hand. Gideon's not so sure just yet. And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. And the Lord said unto him, surely I will be with you, and you shall smite the Midianites as one man. Okay, it's only talk so far. It's only talk. But what we see is a little bit of doubt in Gideon. And he said unto him, if now I have found grace in your sight, then show me a sign. You know, let's do something besides talk if you expected me to go up against the Midianites. Show me a sign that you talk with me. Depart not hence, I pray you, until I come unto you, and bring forth my present, and set it before you. And he said, I will tarry until you come again. Okay, so here's the second lesson. This is going to be physical. And Gideon went and made ready a kid and unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour, and flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and brought it out unto him under the oak, and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and lay them upon this rock, and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand, and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock. Pretty impressive. And consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. And when Gideon perceived, now he knows there's something special about this. But he hadn't quite given in to trust the whole thing yet. When Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, alas, O Lord, because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said unto him, peace be unto you, fear not, you shall not die. Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom, which is Jehovah is peace. Unto this day it is yet in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Okay, so this is the introduction of the angel to Gideon and what he wants Gideon to do. We see a little bit of not real sure about this thing to Gideon. Now, the angel is going to ask him to do something else. It came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, take your father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old. Okay? And I can't tell you exactly what this has got to do with it. Why is the second bullock? That the second bullock is special. There was one thought that this was a community bullock that would be dedicated not just for this family, but for other families. And that's why the men of the town were so upset to find out that this bullock was offered. I have no idea knowing whether that's true or that's just a good thing that somebody made up. But the Bible just said it was the second bullock, and he's 7 years old. Okay? And throw down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the grove that is by it. Now here's something else I'll just throw out here. That word grove... The word grove is interpreted grove in the King James, which we would think of a group of trees planted. But it also had to do with Ashtaroth, who was the wife of Baal. Baal was the male god that had the altar. And then this grove was sometimes thought to be a piece of a tree, almost like a totem pole, but a piece of a tree with carvings in it that was set in the ground that represented his wife, Ashtaroth. And so that's why it's often spoken of as an altar to Baal and then a grove associated with it. But either way, this grove was associated with this Baal worship. And notice, this was Gideon's father. Gideon was raised in a household that worshipped Baal. But there was something about Gideon, something about him. Okay, verse 26. Build an altar unto the Lord your God upon this rock and in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove which you shall cut down. So if he's going to burn up a cow, it's going to be more than just one pole. So it could be that it was a ring of trees. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said. Okay? More action. A little more trust built up. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. This is a third lesson in trust. Gideon's taking action now on what the angel asked him to do. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down. The grove was cut down by it, and the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, "Who has done this thing?" And when they inquired and asked, they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing." Now, remember that phrase, because that may come up a little bit later. Gideon was building a reputation. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, "Bring out your son that he may die, because he has cast down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the grove that was by it." Well, Joash is a father, and he may worship Baal, but he did have character. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, "Will you plead for Baal? Will you save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one cast down his altar." Therefore, that on that day he called him Jerubbaal, which means "let Baal contend," saying, "Let Baal plead against him, because he has thrown down his altar." Then all of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and Abiezer was gathered after him. Okay, now besides Abiezer, he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher, unto Zebulun, and unto Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. Okay, don't have to worry about the specific names, but just notice he sent messengers to specific tribes that were close by to send people out. So they send out thousands of people to go with Gideon. And Gideon said unto God, here's that word again, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor, and if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said. Alright? This is going to be the fourth lesson in trust to help build Gideon's trust. And it was so, for he rose up early on the morrow and thrust the fleece together and wring the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. Well, would that be enough to make you believe? Would that be enough to make you at this point to stake your life to go against these Midianites that for 7 years had been running over all the people, and nobody in Israel had stood up to them in 7 years, and now here's one man that's going to go against them, and the dew was on the fleece for one night, and would you trust that to put your life in front of all these Midianites? And Gideon said unto God, "Let not your anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray you, but this once with the fleece." One more time. "Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew." And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. That's five. Five lessons in trust to get to this point. Five lessons to get Gideon from just threshing the wheat to hide it, to cutting down the throwing down the altar, cutting down the grove, and going through all of this. So is you ready yet? Not quite. Next chapter. Then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, now here's part of the story you're probably going to remember the most. The people that are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand has saved me. There's too many. Okay, you good Bible students, how many were there? How many thousand were there? 30. 16,000 or?
30.
That's close.
32.
That's real close. Okay. Now remember, they're going to get, well, we'll get to the grasshopper in just a second. Mine own hand has saved me. Now, therefore, go to, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, lack of trust, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. This is the sixth lesson in trust. This is the sixth lesson in trust, because Gideon has got to release these men. You know, if Gideon is really not sure about this, he's thinking, I'm not letting those 22,000 men leave. We got to have them all. So it took trust for Gideon to let 22,000 soldiers leave. Now this is just a side note. This is not on trust. I'm just throwing this out here. But when I've read this thing before, I'm wondering, what was in the mind of those 22,000 when they left their homes and they all got together and they went out there and joined this army knowing that they were going out there to fight? What was in their mind when they were leaving their homes on the way, and yet when they got there and they were asked, if you're scared, go home? They left. Could there be a lesson in there for us? Make sure our courage is real. Make sure we're not just on a rah-rah bandwagon to be doing what other people are doing. But make sure that we're real with God. And we realize how bad the battle is. And at the first time the battle gets rough, we're not going to turn tail and say, okay, well, okay. 22,000 of them went out there, but they were just simply fearful and afraid, and they went home. That's the sixth lesson in trust. And the Lord said to Gideon, the people are yet too many. And I imagine Gideon is thinking, listen, Lord, this is getting a little ridiculous here. I've already lost 2/3 of my men. I'm down to 10,000. Bring them down under the water. Okay, the people are yet too many. Bring them down under the water, and I will try them for you there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto you, this shall go with you, the same shall go with you. And of whosoever I say unto you, this shall not go with you, the same shall not go. This is the seventh lesson in trust. Because Gideon's got to make a decision. Do I even want to take these men down to this water? Because when I get them down there, God has already said, it's up to him. Whoever I say stays, stays. Whoever I say let go, you've got to let them go. You already let 22,000 go. So Gideon got to make a decision. Am I going to go on and take these people to the water and suffer the consequences? So now Gideon's really having to make decisions. Hard decisions. So he brought down the people under the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, everyone that laps of the water with his tongue as a dog laps, him shall you set by himself. Likewise, everyone that bows down upon his knees to drink. The only explanation that I've seen of this that really made sense, and I would think made sense, was that those that lapped like a dog were the ones that reached down and got the water and put it to their mouth and lapped at it like a dog, rather than just laid belly down and stuck their face in the water. The ones that would lap like a dog would have their head up. They would be the most alert. They would be the ones that weren't going to fill themselves so full of water that they couldn't fight, because they were at an edge of a battlefield. They came out there to fight. And so the best explanation I've heard was is that this physically showed which of the men, of the 10,000, were really aware of the fight and were going to keep themselves ready to fight. Whatever reason, and whether the Lord made some of them do it one way, I don't know. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense that the God would make some of them. But the Lord knew enough about them. He knew there was going to be a difference in these men. Some were ready to go. Some 22,000 already showed they were scared. And so he's getting rid of the ones that weren't alert. Because the ones that's left, they've got something big to do. Big. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. 300. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you. Whew, 300. What is going through Gideon's mind now? 32,000, I'm down to 300 men and me. And deliver the Midianites into your hand. And let all the other people go, every man unto his place. So the people took victuals in their hand and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man unto his tent, and retained those 300 men. And the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley. Now remember, out of 32,000, there's 31,700 of them been sent back to their homes or to their tents. Gideon and 300 are going on. But the Lord's not through with Gideon's trust yet. It came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get you down unto the host. And Gideon's like, Lord, look, I've already let all my men go. Now you want me to go down to the Midianite camp? Me by myself? You want me to go down there? Get you down unto the host. He didn't give him a choice. This is part of the test. It wasn't like, if you would like to go down there, you go ahead and go. It was like, Gideon, you've got to do this. Get you down under the host, for I have delivered it into your hand. The Lord did help him out, though. But if you fear to go down with you, go with Phurah, your servant, to the host. This is the eighth lesson in trust. The eighth thing that's happened between God and Gideon to try to build up his trust. And you shall hear what they say, and afterward shall your hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. The Lord knew what he was doing. This is the one last thing you've got to do, Gideon. You go down there, you go into the host, you get close enough to hear them, hear what they say. Then will your hand be strengthened. That's why God told him he had to go. He had to go through that test. How many times does God give us this test and we won't take the easy way out? We don't want to take the test. But a lot of things are given to us, as we heard this morning. These things are given to us to strengthen us. And Gideon needed strengthening. He wasn't quite where God wanted him yet. Then he went down with Phurah, his servant, into the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude. And their camels were without number, and the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow and said, behold, I dreamed a dream. And lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came upon a tent unto a tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay alongside. Then his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand has God delivered Midian and all the host. How did they know? How did they know the name of Gideon? Well, you remember back when Gideon broke down the altar and he cut down the grove, and the men of the city came out and said, who could have done this but Gideon, the son of Joash. See, that was building that reputation. That reputation was part of what God needed the Midianites to hear. Because this Midianite is saying, oh, that's, we've already heard about him. He'll throw down the image of these false gods, or he'll throw down the image of our God. He'll throw down the image of Baal, even his father's own image. He'll take his father's bull and sacrifice it to his God instead of to Baal. So he had this reputation. Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for into his hand has God delivered Midian and all the host. And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof that he worshipped and returned into the host of Israel and said, this is it. This is what God had been preparing him for. Now he's going back to those 300 and he tells them, arise, for the Lord has delivered into your hand the host of Midian. And up to this point, Gideon wasn't able to say that, or else God wouldn't have put him through what he put him through. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And this is the part of the story we're most familiar with. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise. No doubt now. No doubt. You look on me, and what I do, you do. And Midian is delivered into our hands. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall you do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow you the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord unto Gideon. So Gideon and the 300 men that were with him came unto the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had but newly set the watch. They blew their trumpets and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. And this was the ultimate lesson. This is the point. I mean, this is it. This is the critical point. If you're Gideon and you're standing there, and you've only got 300 men, and you're surrounded an army of people that's like grasshoppers. There's so many of them out there. And they can easily overrun you. And all you've got is a trumpet, and you've got a pitcher with a lamp in it, and you've got to break that pitcher. And you know what's going to happen. When that pitcher's broken, that's it. I mean, there's no turning back. When you break that pitcher, that light identifies exactly where you are. You're not in hiding anymore. There's no escaping in the dark unless you throw the pitcher down and run. This is the moment of truth, of trust, that the Lord has been working on him to get him to that point. And fast forward to mine and your life, at some point, we're going to have a moment of truth. That moment's going to come when we've got to make a decision. We've got to do this or we've got to do that because of what the Lord wants us to do. The ultimate lesson in trust was when he stood there, with that pitcher over that lamp. Am I going to break it or am I not? And the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers and held the lamps in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hand to blow withal. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Look at this. They stood every man in his place. Gideon was leading a bunch of brave people. 300 did the same thing Gideon did. Do you think the trust that Gideon had rubbed off on these guys? They stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled, and the 300 blew the trumpets. The Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. You reckon Gideon saw that coming? You reckon in his wildest dreams he ever dreamed the Amalekites would kill themselves? And the host fled to Beth Shittah in Zererath and to the border of Abel Meholah, and I may have it pronounced halfway right, unto Taboth. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together. Okay, remember, all those different tribes, he called for men to come. Most of them went home afraid. The others went home because of the way they drank water. But now the Midianites are on the run, and Gideon says, y'all come on back. The battle's ours. They gather themselves together out of Naphtali, out of Asher, out of all Manasseh, and pursue after the Midianites. So now they've got courage. They were scared before. Now, I don't know if it was these same men. I'm assuming that it's going to be some of these same men, because when he called for soldiers the first time, they came. Now he's calling for them again, but the situation's a little different. They've got the Midianites on the run. I could be making a bad assumption that it's some of the same men, but it's from the same tribes. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites, and take before them the waters unto Beth Barah and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters unto Beth Barah and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. They slew Oreb upon the rock Horeb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb. Pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. Wow, what a story. It's an awesome story when you just think of what Gideon did. But when you think about the details of what he did, when he stood there, I mean, can you just imagine? Can you imagine standing there looking at that army with that pitcher over that lamp? And the Lord has said, you got to break that lamp. That's the only way. You have no choice. You have no other way except just to completely give up on God. I mean, God got him to this crossroads, and he had no choice but to break that pitcher. That's life or death. And he broke the pitcher. We're going to have tough choices. Are we willing to break the pitcher? Are we willing to take that stand? So, let's leave the story of Gideon and finish up our remarks with just a few observations. Trust is not just in the big things like breaking the pitcher. Or we could have easily used the story of David and Goliath slinging a rock at Goliath. It's not just in that. What if it grows in the little things we do, like, and I didn't put the verses of Scripture down, but you good Bible students, you'll know where these come from. What about using a kind answer to turn away anger? Because God's Word tells us that's what we're supposed to do. Bringing up children in the Lord. Loving a wife as oneself. Denying oneself and taking up our cross. Taking Jesus' yoke upon us. Even asking for wisdom and believing we're going to get it. It takes trust. Seeking the kingdom of God first. Praying in secret. What about adding the Christian graces so that we won't fall? Each one of these is a commandment. And each one of these has a risk. Each one of these has a reward. The only way we'll get the reward is if we take the risk. And we do it in trust. We have faith in it. We believe that we're going to get these things. So we'll go back to the things we talked about at the very beginning. After we've gone through the story of Gideon, and I hope you kind of followed along with the thinking, and I hope I wasn't too bad off on the thinking, that Gideon's trust didn't come instantaneous. The mighty man of valor that was threshing the wheat by the wine press to hide it so that the Midianites wouldn't get it was not exactly the same man that stood next to the Midianites and broke the pitcher. He was a mighty man of valor, okay, but he had some things to learn. And God put him through these steps, these learning processes. But it's encouraging to me that God was willing to do it. Because if God didn't think this was a process that needed to go through, he would have cut Gideon off when it came to the fleece. Don't give me a test. You either believe me or you don't. I'm not going to wet that fleece on the floor. But God did it not only once, he did it twice. He did what Gideon asked him twice. So to me, that tells me God, this is God's process. He's willing to work with us. He's willing to strengthen us. And he'll work with us and strengthen us as long as we're making the right decisions. As long as we're proceeding forward in faith. So, how do you think trust works? Is it instantaneous? Is it miraculous? Do we have it or do we not? Is it a growth process? It's a question we ask at the first. Trust, belief, and love. Three things God cannot give us. We must decide to develop and grow them ourselves. And God will help us. But we've got to be willing to break the pitcher. Trust is earned. Trust is learned. Okay, first question is, do you trust me? Not necessarily me, but anybody that gets up and talks to you. Do you trust your speakers? And I guess the question I'm really asking is, how do you know? Only if you know I speak the truth. Only if you know I speak the truth. That assumes that you know what the truth is. It assumes that you believe there is truth. It assumes you believe you can be taught truth and that you can recognize truth. So if you know I or another speaker are speaking the truth, then you're obliged to trust me because it's the truth you trust. But how can you tell? How can you tell if you trust it or not? If you respond to my words or not? Not just me, but any speaker. If you respond to the words of the speaker, we've had excellent speakers this morning. We're going to have excellent speakers in the morning. If you listen, if you take notes, if you respond to what they say, then you trust what they say. Can we prove our trust in God? See, all these questions, they're so broad and general. Your answer that you come up with these questions will be better than mine. But the last one is, can we prove our trust in God? And I would say yes, by the list of things we've received. There's rewards in trusting God. And I think the story of Gideon points that out. Gideon was rewarded. He was given a harder task. But every time he passed the harder task, he was given another one harder. And how many of us have got 10 years from now a very difficult decision to make? 10 years from now, you and I may have a very difficult decision to make. And the Lord may be preparing us now so that when that time comes to make that big decision, we've made the little decisions. Our trust has grown. Our faith has grown. Our belief in God has grown so that we can make that tough decision, just like Gideon, see. He went through that process to get him to the point that he could break that pitcher. And in mine and your life, we're going to get to that point where we've got to do that. We're not always going to be able to go through life going to church without any controversies and without anything at work we've got to do or any decisions we've got to make. And we can't flip and flop around about sin. At some point, we've got to make the hard decision that I'm going to leave this off my life. I'm ashamed of this. This is not going to get me down and keep me from going to heaven. It's not going to let me be a bad example to my kids or my grandkids. I'm done with it. I'm breaking the pitcher. I'm to this point. I'm breaking the pitcher. I'm ready. God's going to get us there. Yes, we can prove our trust in God by the list of things we received. So here's the lesson. We want to be a Gideon. God wants us to be a Gideon. The church needs us to be Gideons. Our families need us to be Gideons. We've got all the tools we need to be Gideons. And most of them are in God's Word. So read and study so that we'll be prepared when the task is put before us. Thank you.